Steve, my good man, how the devil are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you? I was going to try and join you in a little ring pull pulling then, but I can't because I've got a twist top. Very annoying.
You're smashing back the Monster Energy drink at 9:10 at night, Steve. You will not be sleeping today.
No, I am buzzing all night. And yeah, free plug Monster, so send us some free stuff.
And yeah, while we're there, I'm drinking Tennent's. So if Tennent's want to send me some freebies too, get in touch.
Happy days. Yeah, I'm good, man.
Yeah, I'm very good, mate. I'm very good. As lost all of my words there. I was going to say something clever and I really lost it completely, Steve. So I'm just going to say the sky's blue, the sun is shining, and in contrast to the weather you're having, it's been quite a fucking treat up here the last few couple of days.
Mate, we had a treat this afternoon when the wet stuff started falling from the sky. It was amazing. It was literally amazing. After what can only be described as one a hell of a summer so far. Yeah, it rained and it thundered and it lightning, and it's just been incredible. It's so cool now. It's lovely. And everything smells amazing. It's got that after rain summer smell. It's fabulous, mate. I loved it. But yeah, kicked off about 2. There's probably like 40 lads run out of the workshop, stripped off with the Radox, like, yay! Annual pass.
I don't know where it is that you work, Steve, but if every time it rains, you just get a load of sweaty guys just stripping off from their overalls and running outside to frolic, it's maybe not the environment I thought it was.
It's different, mate. It's different. But it depends where you work. Like where I am at the minute is like what I'm classing as like the finishing shed. So when your boat's nearly done, it goes into this little shed, which is basically like a Japanese torture chamber. So it's steel with an inflatable roof. Right, so there's like big pillows on the roof that just basically hold hot air, and then these fans that they've just positioned just below it blows said hot air down on you. So it's like nice. Double the amount of treat. Yes, it's been fun. It's been hot, sweaty, and sticky, and not very pleasant. So as soon as that rain came, lovely, mate. Much welcome. Yeah,
that's good. Yeah. Do you know what the smell of the rain is called, Steve? That after rain smell?
Fucking sexual.
Petrichor. But we'll go with sexual if you like. It's that's fine. Both work.
Sounds like a dinosaur name.
It does sound like a dinosaur, actually, doesn't it? Or maybe a Pokemon, even.
Yeah, Pokemon. There you go, Ducati. That's what you could call your next hero.
Yeah, a wild petrichor has appeared on the Ducati side pods.
I like it. Yes, that's definitely going to have to be the name of their next out there aero package, the petrichor.
It's funny to think about. I wonder what Ducati, or it might not be Ducati next. It could be KTM. It could be Aprilia. Like, they're both being pretty innovative with their aero as well. But I wonder where the next weird aero appendage is going to appear. Because they're running out of places now, man. Like, we've had the fairing aero. We've had the front aero. We've now got the seat unit aero. We've had aero on the swing arm. Like, where's next?
I don't know. Fins on the wheels, maybe? On the spokes? You could have. This is definitely the buzz from the Monster kicking in here. On the spokes of the wheels, you could have aero mounted on swivels that always stayed flat, but slightly downwards, so you could keep that wheel planted on the ground. So if you had this, say, a 5-spoke wheel, and you could fit 3 of these little winglets on either side of each spoke that always kept it, say, let's call it 25 degrees. How much downforce is that going to keep that back wheel on the floor?
I mean, it would keep a lot of downforce. However, that would be a movable aero device, and we know they are banned. If it was going to be constantly staying level, that would involve some active aero going on there, and that would be banned. When you said it to start with, I was imagining it like a chariot with just like blades sticking out the sides of the wheels. Like, this is Ducati's new way of making sure no one can overtake them. Just like puncture the tire if anyone comes too close.
Russell Crowe on board, yes. Happy day.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it? Remember Jack Miller's Pramac leathers, who's in that like suit of armor at Australia a few years ago? It would be something like that, but it would be like a Roman centurion with the helmet and the leathers and everything all kitted out to look just like Ro Crow in Gladiator.
I like it. I do like it. But yeah, I don't know where the next Arrow thing is going to be, unless they reinvent something that they've already invented, take it to that next level. But who knows? Who knows? Like you say, you can't have active Arrow, so I don't know. We'll have to give it a thought. Get the boffins out with the LSD and the crayons again.
Exactly. Break or maybe just boys. Give me the LSD and the crayons. That's fine. I'll have a go.
Yeah, why not? You can have a bash, mate. Deary, deary me.
So, Steve, anyway, that's us. We've already started going off the rails a bit there. You're on the energy drink. We're about an hour late recording today because your computer wouldn't play ball. So I'm a few beers deeper than usual to start this show. So yeah. That probably explains my lack of words a few minutes ago. So before things get any worse, shall we just dive straight in?
We'd better do before we're both a bit sort of spiced out of our mind.
Good stuff. So I'm Tim. He's Steve. And this is for the love of MotoGP. Now, if you are new to MotoGP, guys, we have a show for you. It's called The Introduction to MotoGP 2022, and it tells you everything you need to know to start enjoying the sport we all love. It's aimed at absolute beginners, so we cover the rules, the riders, the teams, the bikes, the rule sets. We said some shit about flags, you can ignore that. Everything else is golden, though, so enjoy the show. It's a good one, and then come back to this. Well, maybe listen to that one. And then listen to the rest of the shows for this season so you can understand what's going on and how the second half of the season is going to shape out.
Yep, download that back catalogue and then come back to us. Catch up.
Exactly. So, Steve, this week, my friend, we've got our Austria race review, preview, sorry, not review. I'm not a week in the future. That would suck. Our Austria race preview, and got a couple of bits of news to talk about, but not a huge amount really is going on. So, in theory, Steve, this show might be one of our shorter offerings to the world.
We always say that, and then 2.5 hours in, we're like, shit, this has been a long show.
2.5 hours in, we realize we haven't even done the played the intro music yet, and we haven't even really started talking about motorbikes. And we're like, well, fuck, that's probably going to have to be edited out.
That's normally before we press record. What normally happens is on a standard record night, Tim and I will have this lengthy chat, put the world to rights before we start recording about all sorts of shit. You know, we sorted out all sorts. We've won Nobel Prizes. Pretty much we have sorted the world. And then we go, shit, it's 11 o'clock. We better record the show.
Yeah, exactly. We're like, oh, God, yeah, okay, this Russia-Ukraine situation, that can wait. We've got a show to record now.
Yeah, we'll get that treaty signed tomorrow. We're all good.
Exactly. And then tomorrow I'm hungover and you're at work, and then it just gets forgotten about till next week.
Yeah, we are like the silent people in the background who just sort the world and then go to work.
Yeah, exactly. We are. I like to think of us as a shadow government, Steve. If anyone's going to be a shadow government, I trust you and I to do it better than anyone else.
Oh, yeah, probably. Probably. I don't know. What would be your first rule when you came in? What would be your first offering to the world?
I would give the world 5 years to completely rid itself of fossil fuels.
Yes. Yeah. I think mine, I would probably go something along the lines of no flip-flops after 11.
Okay, I think maybe you're on a better train of thought here than me. So it's no flip-flops after 11, and then we're rid of the world of fossil fuels.
Yeah, yeah. When you're going to do some serious work, you've got to be dressed properly.
It's not even dressed properly. I don't mind if anyone wants to wear flip-flops. That's fine. Just make sure they're quiet. I hate flip-flops because they're so loud. There's that really good Lee Evans sketch about flip-flops, and it's just they make such an awful noise. They're horrible. They don't even look good. Just let's all just give up with flip-flops, maybe, and we'll just wear normal sandals. There's nothing wrong with normal sandals, especially if you're bold enough to wear them with socks. Just saying.
That is a old fashioned though. I quite like sandals and flip flops. I'm all for the barefoot though. It's all about the barefoot. So, yeah. Feel the ground. Anywho, let's get this back on some MotoGP.
Okay, let's do that, Steve. So, talking about on the ground, like your feet and feeling it, and this was a really bad segue, but Marc Marquez is going to be on the ground in Austria. Obviously, he's not going to be riding a motorcycle, but he will
No.
be in attendance. He said that during his time off previously due to injury, he became too disconnected from the team, too disconnected from the development of the bike, and this time he wants it to be different. He said he's had his time away from the team now, from the track, and he wants to get back on the ground to be hanging out with Stefan Bradl, hanging out with Santi Hernandez, his crew chief, both of whom he has been in pretty constant contact with this time around. But he just wants to be back in the garage, I think, kind of steering the direction of the bike a little bit without being able to ride it, and sort of just to remind everyone that he is fucking top dog.
I think this makes perfect sense, if I'm honest. We saw it when he came back after the last injury, where he'd had no input into the development of that bike. And to me, this sort of says that he is fully committed to coming back no matter what, and is still on that mind train where he can win another title. And he's aware of that. He's fully aware of that. So he's obviously felt in the past like, he's taken a step back, concentrated on his recovery, but that had affected the dynamic within the team and the development of the bikes. We know from previous conversations with people that this guy is an absolute demon developing any part you give him, and he will just get the maximum out of it. So this time around, he is going to do all he can, stay in contact with the team, keep his eye in, help with the development of the bike, help with the team dynamic, and just keep that feeling going. Because again, we know that these guys are all one big, like, proper family in there. And all the crew chiefs say you can read the body language. They're having a bad day, straight away. And they know how to handle them, how to talk to them. And when you sort of lose that, you lose a pathway with your team. So yeah, this makes perfect sense. Stay in touch, be more hands-on, even in your recovery. Because he can still be there, he can still fly, he can still travel. And that'll just help for when he does finally come back. And it'll help with the fans as well. Out with the fans as well. They'll all love seeing him, because it is a big loss for the fans. A lot of people come just to see him. He has a massive following. So, yeah, it'll certainly do him the world good and probably spur him on with his recovery as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it'll probably spur Honda on. It'll spur Honda on just to have him in the garage again and just have his input, even his just basic ideas, and just have him floating about, even if he's not really doing anything. I think the fact he's there is going to make he's going to create a very different dynamic in that garage, and probably a dynamic that that garage needs. Like, we are seeing quite clearly that Honda are just fucking falling apart at the moment. So just to have him back in there, like, just try putting him in there again. Like, that's fine. It can't go any worse than it's currently going for any party involved.
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm looking to the bit where, I don't know, Stefan Bradl comes back after FP1, goes to get in his box, and Marquez is sat in his seat and is like, "Nope, my spot. Fuck off."
Sitting there just like
There
with his
it
leathers
is.
on, putting his gloves on, helmet on.
All right, I can still get it on. Oh, maybe not. Just open this window.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's a good point. They're definitely not going to have him on caretaker's duties, are they? He ain't going to be changing light bulbs or making tea and coffee for everyone.
Oh God, no! They will pamper him, definitely. But in all seriousness, it will be fantastic to see him back. He's a big loss to the sport, so it will be really good to see him back in Austria.
Yeah, it really will be. So I'm really looking forward to it. I did the other day, Steve. I can't remember when this news came out, but we've known for a few days he's going to be coming to Austria. And I had a bit of a funny day the other day where I was intoxicated, let's say. And I was on another planet, and I was thinking about MotoGP on my other planet. And while I was thinking about it, I was also thinking about Silly Season. And I was like, oh, Silly Season's been a bit boring, really, this year. It had so much potential, but it sort of started to just fizzle out to nothing. It's going to be interesting to see when all the new people are on their new bikes and stuff, but I wanted something dramatic to happen this year. And I was sitting there thinking about it, and I realised how exciting Silly Season in Formula One has been this year. I don't know if you've been following it, but it's been fucking mad, in which they've had drivers... one driver retires, and then 2 days later, another world champion goes to take his drive, but didn't tell his current team that he's leaving until they found out from the announcement from the new team. So his current team panicked, and then they put out the announcement saying, okay, it doesn't matter that he's gone. We're going to sign our test driver. He's going to be our new star, blah-de, blah-de, blah, ready to go. 2 hours later, said new star posts on Instagram, I never agreed to this. I will not be driving for them this year. It's an absolute joke. Blah, 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 blah. So this is all kicked off with now. There seems to be lawsuits flying around everywhere. It looks like someone else that had a contract for at least next year is probably going to have that contract torn up and thrown out the window. Like, it's just gone. It's gone mad. There's talking of like civil lawsuits against people now in the order of like 20 million quid and stuff. Like, it's gone mental. And I was like, why can't we have a mad Silly Season like this in MotoGP? And then I sat there for a moment and I went, what if Marc Marquez is going to Austria and he's going to go talk to another team? And the reason Ducati haven't announced who's going to be riding in their number two spot next year is because they're about to do a deal with Marquez Senior, as in Marc Marquez, as well as Alex Marquez, and have both Marquez brothers over to the fold. What a fucking coup that would be for them. So I got really excited for about an hour, being like, this is definitely going to fucking happen. And then I sort of came back to planet Earth, and I was like, oh, it's not going to happen, is it? That's a bit sad. But it was a really exciting moment in my head for a while, Steve, and I wanted to share that joy with you for a moment, because wouldn't that be fucking great?
It would be fantastic, mate. Likelihood of it happening... fucking slim, very, very slim. We know that guy is a Honda through and through, but it would just be incredible. We always get these little snippety shots every now and again of some pap will get of a rider talking to a different team somewhere in the paddock, but pretty open. And you know, they'll try and get an angle on it and they'll get the shot and it'll be released upon the world. Then all of a sudden, the rumor mill just explodes in this cauldron of just seething rumors, and the next thing you know, you've got let's say Giacomo back and he's about to be riding the Honda.
Well, quite, but then all to be fair, no one saw Valentino Rossi moving over to Yamaha. That sort of came out of nowhere, so they can happen. Yeah, these moves,
these things do happen. But like you say, you are right, when something like that goes down, it blows Silly Season out of the roof. And everyone loves it, because we do love a good, good Silly Season. We love a good rider shuffle, and just it adds spice to it. You know, just a bit of variety, because we do see riders that stick predominantly with like one manufacturer for a long time. And we just want to see a bit of a shuffle up, a change. But yeah, you're right. That train of thought would be incredible. Absolutely incredible. If they were just to sign them both and not tell Honda that they were taking Mark. If he just, that would really do it. You know, just Marquez getting the Honda garage on the Friday or the Thursday and just say, oh, I'm just gonna nip off for a minute, lads. Just go for a little walk. You know, just to get his picture taken with Ducati. You know, change his jacket on the back, slip on a red shirt, and just slide into the Ducati garage. Like, let's do this. That would be incredible. So that really would be incredible.
I'm sure it's not going to happen, but if it does, you heard it here first. Just saying.
Oh, yes. How much do you think Honda would cry if that ever happened?
Oof, man, can you imagine? It would just be absolute madness if it occurred. It would be, and that really would blow Silly Season apart, but it's not going to happen. We're all fully aware of that, but it would be fun if it did. Call it a thought exercise, eh?
Just a little food for thought. But let us know what would be, you know, you guys at home, if you had a weird scenario for Silly Season, and you know, just let us know and we'll put it out there, share it, put it on, you know, email it, put it on the Facebook group, anywhere, and we'll see what you can come up with. See if you can match Tim's drunken thought process.
We did make our rider lineup predictions, didn't we, at some point in the Facebook group, which once the dust has settled at the end of the year, we'll have to go through all those and see who got them the closest to the truth.
Yeah, they're all in there, all pinned to that top post. So when all the seats are finally announced and taken, we'll go through it and we'll see who the winner is.
Indeed, we will. But Steve, speaking of Ducati, let's move it on to this next piece of news here. And this really isn't that interesting. I had to dig to try and make it interesting for myself. But this is Ducati's podium streak that we're on at the moment, because I keep seeing people getting really excited about the fact that Ducati have just had their 18th podium in a row, or whatever it was at Silverstone. I think it was 18 in a row. And like, this is pretty impressive, but they've also got 8 fucking bikes on the grid. Like, it's going to be a bit depressing if they didn't have a bike on the podium pretty much every race. They'd be doing something really fucking wrong. All of those 8 bikes are capable of winning races. So this isn't a surprise. Why are we all acting like this is an amazing thing? It sort of just should be happening. It's just, I don't clap and get excited. And people that do this really piss me off, Steve. But I don't clap and get excited every time the pilot flying my plane manages to land it and doesn't kill us all. So I'm not going to get excited about the fact that Ducati are doing their job with 8 bikes on the grid and getting podiums every week.
No, they've really put odds in their favour. I do agree with them on this one. But I can also see why people like it. I mean, a good streak, it's nice to see. But also, when you've got 8 bikes on the grid, the odds of that happening are pretty fucking high. So, yeah, I'm not really that fast. There's always bound to be one up there. There's such, whatever, whether it's be GP 20, 21, 22, they're all such good bikes. And they've all, like you say, got a chance of winning at different tracks. And each and every one of those riders is capable of winning a race on the day.
Maybe Luca Marini and Fabio Di Giannantonio aren't at a race-winning pace right yet, but their bikes certainly are, as has been proven this year.
Yeah. Just in the right scenario, when we get the odd, like, weird race where it all goes wrong, like Brad Binder, you know, with his wet race and just big balls.
I mean, that's fair. That was a year ago this weekend as well.
Exactly. So stranger things have happened at sea. You know, it's doable. But yeah, an 18 podium streak has been done before. It's been bettered before, and it will be bettered again. So if it was 18 wins in a row, then I would be looking at it thinking, oh my God.
But yeah, that would be a very different story, wouldn't it? 18 wins in a row, you'd be like, yeah, all right, fair enough, Ducati, you've done a good job here. And 18 podiums in a row for a single rider would be impressive. And that's kind of the thought process I dived into, Steve, because I decided to have a look at how many people have actually, like, individual riders have managed to get more than 18 podiums in a row. I expected it to be a very low number, if there was any. And it turns out there's 3 riders, actually, who have had 18 plus podiums in a row. So while 18 podiums in a row for a manufacturer is good, it's not worth shouting about, if you ask me. But that brings me to my question for you, Steve.
Yeah.
Can you name the 3 riders who have scored 18 plus podiums consecutively?
One's pretty easy because I watched his career, Rossi.
That's fair.
I would imagine there's going to be one from many moons ago. It's got to be Giacomo. He's got to be in there. Agostini's got to be in there. With all his titles, he can't not be in there.
He is in there. So Valentino Rossi has got the most consecutive podiums in a row out of anyone at 23, and he did that between 2002, 2003, and 2004. Next on the list is Giacomo Agostini with 22 podiums in a row, and he did that between 1967, 68, and 69. And then the third one.
Hang on. Let's see if I can get it. Let me get it. It's got. Oh, hang on. Rack your brains. It's not going to be around that area.
So this one's interesting because I'm not going to give it to you just yet. But it's not a, I sort of, it just sort of slipped my memory that it could possibly even be this rider. Do you want me to give you the years in which he did it? And we'll see if we can narrow it down from there for you.
Yeah, yeah, do that. Give me the years.
Okay, so he did it across the 2011 and 2012 seasons.
Stoner.
It was indeed Casey Stoner with 19 podiums in a row aboard the Honda, obviously. But it sort of completely slipped my mind that it could possibly even be Stoner. And that's the, would have been the first year I was watching MotoGP as well.
Yeah, so I've just uncovered the notes because you said earlier you'd somehow snuck the notes in and I covered them with your pretty face. And now I've just uncovered them. Oh, mate, chuffed for myself.
Yeah, I'm impressed with you there, Steve. But yes, 19 podiums in a row for Stoner between 2011 and 2012. And then not quite as good as the 18 in a row, but you mentioned his name earlier, Mick Doohan. Mick Doohan did 17 in a row between 94 and 95. And then two riders have done 15 in a row in the past. One of those, on a separate occasion to the 23 in a row, was Valentino Rossi between 2014 and 2015. I cannot remember Valentino Rossi being on the box 15 times in a row, 2014 to 2015.
No, I can't.
But there we go. That's that happened. The stats are there. And Wayne Rainey did it in 89 to 90 as well.
Nice. Good old Rainey sneaking in there. I like it. Happy days. So yeah, it's been done before. And it will be done again.
Exactly. It's been done before by a single rider. So a manufacturer doing it with their 8 good bikes on the grid, I ain't fussed about. But I just wanted to throw it in there because everyone's talking about it, Steve. And you know me, I like having a hot take on what everyone's talking about.
Yep. Yep. It's not like you ever have an opinion or anything. So
I think potentially, Steve, I'm one of the most opinionated people I actually know. And that's saying something because I know some pretty opinionated people.
I was going to say, I think you're fairly tame compared to like some of the people I have to work with. There's a couple there that, my God, you can't even get. They will give you a scenario and you can't get a word in edgeways because they just want to talk about that scenario. But their opinion is right. It's like, oh, my God, shut up. Let's have a conversation about this. Not a one way street.
The difference there between me and a lot of people, Steve, is my opinion actually is right most of the time and most other people's is wrong. So that's why I can pull this off with a cheeky grin and people still like me, I think, anyway. This is where I find out no one likes me at all.
It's just that baby face, mate. You win them over with that smile.
That's all it takes, man, a smile. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. For the amount I mouth off about politics, there is zero chance I would ever get involved in that ridiculous corrupt game. No chance at all.
You watch, 4 years time, he's going to be on a campaign trail.
Yeah, exactly. In 4 years, I'll be using this podcast as my platform to for the 2026 elections in the UK, although I think that'll be 2025 actually, so I've got that joke wrong.
Yeah,
anyway. Oh, well. That's fine.
Like it. Oh well.
Anyway, Steve, and next and final piece of news here, this one sort of came out of the blue and I haven't really seen this. I didn't see this on MotoGP.com at all. I found this, I think this was reported on both crash.net and Visor Down. And this is that the VR46 Moto 2 team will be no more after this year.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised by this. Obviously it shows they're going to put their efforts just in Moto 3 and Moto GP.
No, the Moto 3 team's already gone. There's no VR46
of course it has,
Moto 3 team, is there?
Of course it has, yeah. My bad, I forgot about that. That's gone. So sole effort now is MotoGP. I guess it makes sense. If you're going to put all your eggs in one basket, you want it to be where arguably the most viewing numbers are, where the most sponsorship money is. So yeah, land in MotoGP and yeah, I mean, Fantic, they make some fantastic motorbikes. There's a guy in town rides one, rides their Scrambler. They really do look good. So yeah, good mate.
And Fantic are the manufacturer that are going to be taking over the Moto2 VR46 team. They're the Italian pretty much just off-road motorcycles from what I understand. Yeah. And they do like e-bikes and things as well, but as far as motorcycles go, it's just kind of scramblers and off-road stuff, motocross bikes, etc.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. Give it a bash. They've bought the team out, so yeah.
As it, I've never actually heard of Fantic before. It was a new one on me. But it looks like Fantic are also going to be supplying the VR46 Academy with off-road motorcycles and stuff, which they'll use for their training, which is interesting because I thought Yamaha did all of that. So is this showing that potentially the VR46 MotoGP squad will never become a Yamaha squad? Is this a complete cut ties with Yamaha completely, move on, we're going to stick with Ducati, we're going to be the Italian team, we're going to do it all like that?
I think you could be right because, Yamaha in the past or up to present have supplied, like the VR46 guys. You see the videos online, they're all on Yammies. That's what Rossi's got at the ranch. So, obviously a step away to an Italian dream team, if you will. But yeah, it does sort of scream that we're never going to see a VR46 Yamaha team, which I know a lot of people were really excited for. Prospect, that prospect is looking less and less likely if you read into this kind of news. So we can only speculate that it's just not going to happen, which it's kind of a shame considering that partnership. But moving forward, obviously, you've got to do what's best for a business. So, which this is essentially, so money talks and go where the money is, obviously. So, well, I'm not saying it's all down to money, but there'll be other reasons as well. So,
I mean, performance will be a huge part of it because when you look at how well the Ducatis are performing compared to how the Yamahas are performing, it makes much more sense right now to be staying on Ducatis. And I feel like maybe in the future, if Yamaha, I mean, they may well have a championship winning bike this year, but if Yamaha managed to produce a bike that is going to be the Yamaha of, the mid to late 2000s, that it was capable of two riders winning on all the time, then I think VR46 would quite happily jump across to them. And I think Yamaha would welcome them with open arms. But until then, it doesn't make any sense to jump away from Ducati, really. Ducati that's creating a better bike. Their factory is, for all intents and purposes, just down the road. Fantic, who are taking over your team, their factory is also just down the road. Like, keep everything as close as possible. Make the Italian dream team that everyone wanted, like 2011 and 2012 to be, with between Rossi and Ducati, but it never came to be. Just go that way. You've got a ranch full of Italian riders riding Italian bikes. Like, as far as just the patriotic branding of that goes, it's a pretty swish deal.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. So, like you say, if things switch, the emphasis on power or switch from power is somewhere else in the future, then who knows, they might jump across. But for now, like you say, why risk losing something that is a proven race winner and championship contender for something that is starting to look like a bit of a dog?
Yeah, also, exactly. It also makes me wonder a little bit that whether the VR46 Academy has quite as much money behind it as we all thought. Like, if it had all of the money in the world, they'd still be running a Moto3 team, they'd still be running a Moto2 team, and they'd be running their MotoGP team as well. It does make me wonder a little bit whether the VR46 team is going to go the way of every other racing team named after a rider, in which they'll be around for a few years and then just disappear. We've seen it over and over again in every sport. Every motorsport has seen this, and they last a few years, they do some successful stuff, then they disappear. And I do wonder whether this is just another sign that that is going to happen sooner rather than later with the VR46 squad.
Yeah, that is kind of what it feels like. I guess from a business sense, you start with a pot of money and just hope results will pull in a big sponsor and they'll shed load more money. So, I don't know, but you are right. Sometimes rider-backed teams just created off the back of a legacy just don't last. So this does feel exactly like that, which is a shame. It's a real shame. But like you say, the history is there. And all we can do is just hope that this VR46 team hangs on just a little bit longer in MotoGP, if you've got all your eggs just in one basket, you haven't got to spread all that money around. And it's not cheap to run a Moto 2 and a Moto 3 team all under one branding. So, yeah, pour your eggs in one basket and then just see what happens. But
I wonder what the price difference is. I wonder if it's cheaper to run a Moto 3 and Moto 2 team than it is to run a single MotoGP team. I bet it is.
It probably is, yeah. My first reaction then was, I bet it's on par when you combine the two together compared to the one. But actually, you know, thinking about it, I bet it is less, because just look at the rental price of a MotoGP bike. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's massive compared to the others. So just on that alone, yeah, I reckon it is less to run two teams as opposed to one MotoGP team.
Yeah, I suspect it probably is. We know it's, what, about 80k to get a Moto 3 rolling chassis and everything for the year. I think with engine as well, is that about 80k?
Yes.
Whereas we know it's millions to get a MotoGP bike for the year.
Yeah, exactly. So when you compare, let's just use that as an example. Isn't Moto 3 capped at 87k now?
Yeah, it's something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it came out the other week. Yeah, I'm sure that's right. We'll call it that for hypothetical numbers. So 87,000 compared to, I think the last I heard, a MotoGP bike was something like 2.1 million. So yeah, that's an incredible difference. So straight off the back of that, you've got to start thinking that makes more economic sense. Plus into that, repair bills, the number of people you need, rider salaries, because in the difference between salaries in these classes is huge. So all in all, it has to be cheaper. It has to.
Yeah.
Just off a quick, like, simple sprouting off bit of maths, but has to be.
That's if my favorite kind of maths, mate.
Oh, yeah. My favorite is the kind where you look up the answer beforehand and you drop it into a conversation and everyone goes, wow, he's really good at maths. You're like, yeah, it's fooled you, fucker.
I thank you very much. Brush your shoulder and walk away.
Yeah. I've got a genius sitting up there with a calculator. Thank you.
Anyway, Steve, that's pretty much the news, my friend. It was kind of those three bits that I wanted to talk about. I haven't seen anything else kind of that it was worth I deemed worth a chat to get really in depth with at the moment. Obviously, there's the recovery of Gino Ria going on at the moment after the terrible crash at Suzuka.
I did just see a press release just before we came on air. People were talking about saying that he is now off the ventilator and breathing on his own and is responding to people's voices and actions. So all really positive. So yeah, best wishes to him and his family and speedy recovery, because that was a hell of a crash and not a situation we want to see any rider in at all. So yeah, recover well, mate.
Yeah, exactly. And on that note, Steve, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we can talk about the Austria race that's this weekend.
Let's do it, buddy.
Good stuff. So, guys, bear with us for just one moment and we will be right back with you. And we are back. Thank you for bearing with us. My bladder is nicely emptied, Steve. You look a bit cooler and a bit more with it and back in the room than you did as we ended the recording just then.
Yeah, I was getting a bit warm. I did have joggers on. I had to take those off, put shorts on, and went and stood outside, which was fucking lovely, I must admit. So, yeah, after the stifling heat, we are back into the chill of good old British summer, so I'm happy with that.
I like that you've claimed to have put shorts on as well, Steve. You forget I can see you, my friend. I know you're just sitting there in your pants.
I am, actually. I must admit, I am just sitting in my pants.
That's the luxury of a podcast, Steve, is that no one can actually see you, so you can sit dressed however you like.
It's one of those Zoom meetings, isn't it, when everyone was in lockdown, where you just got your shirt and tie on, and that's it. You're completely stuffed, apart from the rest of it. And it's like, yeah,
Exactly.
no one can see the bottom half.
As every night when we record, Steve, I'm wearing my heels and my suspenders, so I'm ready to go.
Why not, mate? I don't blame you. Whatever you're comfortable in, my friend.
Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate that. Anyway, let's dive in to our race preview, Steve. The Crypto Data Motorrad Grand Prix von Österreich at the Red Bull Ring in Austria.
I swear they make these names longer and longer. You can imagine the commentators getting the data sheet and just being like, for Christ's sake, why can't they just call it the
Yeah.
Grand Prix of America? Just like
That's
an
true.
easy
What?
name.
Yeah, like Kota, what was the American race? What was that? Was that a normal one? What is
Yeah.
more to the point, what is crypto data?
There's got to be some cryptocurrency. Site, isn't it? Buying and selling, I would imagine. It's got to be. Got to
Yeah,
be,
crypto data tech, cryptodata.com. Their homepage is all about MotoGP currently. They've even got the MotoGP font on there.
Nice.
Crypto data raffle. What is crypto data? Come on, just tell me what you are. Company, where's the about page? Here we go. Who knew this was what this podcast was going to turn into, Steve?
Well, we are detectives, so you know.
Crypto Data is a company that develops innovative technologies, products, and services in order to surpass current technological limits and is committed to sharing social progress with the world. Do you know what I hate, Steve? Companies that give you bullshit things like that and don't tell you actually what they do.
Yeah, so in the background, they make chip boxes. Something probably known to us, probably something completely irrelevant to the name. But yeah, so well, at least they claim to give it to the public, so at a small fee.
I reckon, Steve, crypto data develop products and services based on blockchain technology to ensure user security and data encryption and are applicable in various fields. That's what I reckon they do.
I think you could
But
be right there, mate.
I still don't know what that actually means, though.
There's a lot of big words in there, mate, and I haven't got my dictionary in front of me at the minute, so we'll just say they're a kind enough company to sponsor a race so we can go to Austria.
So we can go to Austria. Are they paying for us to go to
Well,
Austria? Because I will say anything nice about them if they're going to send us to Austria, Steve.
they're not sending us personally, but they're sending the MotoGP series, which we love, to Austria, I guess, in some way.
Okay. No, that's fair.
So.
I'm with you. I'm with you. They could be, for all we know, the Third Reich of blockchain companies, but because they are sponsoring a MotoGP race, I'm sure they're not the Third Reich of blockchain companies at all. That was
Jesus.
that's the kind of thing they'll get us sued. They're probably
That
not
will
the
get.
Third Reich of blockchain companies, but they're clearly nice enough to sponsor an event that we're all going to watch and enjoy. So that's the important thing.
Exactly. So we're all on board with you. Happy days. Thank you very much. Don't sue us. What the hell just happened? Something's happened. There's
Oh
things
God.
beeping in the background.
Oh God,
What's going
crypto
on?
data are listening in, Steve. They're trying to shut us down.
They have. The Xbox just turned itself on for some bizarre reason and off. There we go.
Uh-oh, they're listening.
Yeah. Oh, the light's still on. Turn off, you son of a bitch. Oh, there it goes. It's off. They're not listening anymore.
That's what you think, mate. That's what you think.
Yeah.
They'll Anyway, crypto data, lovely, lovely people. Definitely not the Third Reich of blockchain technology. Wonderful folks there. I'm sure all of them are wonderful human beings. So, moving on. This race,
Quick.
then, Steve, the Grand Prix von Österreich is taking place in the Red Bull Ring in Austria, and it features MotoGP, Moto2, Moto3, and it's the penultimate round of the MotoE World Cup.
Yes, happy to have a Moto E back. That race is going to be cracking. So yeah, have to go to, definitely have to make sure keep an eye on that one. So yes, for anyone that doesn't know, watch it. It is great.
It's been really fun this year. We haven't really spoken about it at all this year because we've managed to just chat enough shit that the shows are too long without it. But at some point, we will commit certainly some time into talking about Moto E. I think maybe, Steve, what we should aim as our off-season project is just rewatch the entire Moto E season and just do like a couple of big overview review shows.
Yeah, that's a good shout. The races are shorter, so we can condense it into like a couple of shows. So, yeah, I'm all game for that. We'll have to put that one in there, buddy. That sounds like a plan to me.
Okay, no promises, but that's what we'll we'll pencil that into the off season show list.
Yeah, definitely. I'm all game. I'm down with that one.
So the Red Bull Ring, Steve. Now, this is a track we generally think of to be dominated by Ducatis, and historically it has been, but there's been other winners here too. We've seen two different KTMs win races around here, sort of in weird circumstances. You've referenced Binder's win in the wet earlier on in the show, and that was a weird race that Binder went and won there, but he won it. And the other win came from Oliveira in that amazing last corner finish where Oliveira's cruising around in third quite comfortably, and then Miller and Pol Espargaró, who are fighting for the win, managed to both run wide in the last corner, and Oliveira just swoops in to take the win. So there was two KTMs on that podium and a single Ducati. So this track has been favourable to KTMs in the past as well. Mm. And Suzuki were looking set to win a race here with Mir in 2020 until the race was red flagged and restarted. And that was that time where Suzuki didn't have a spare rear tyre for him, so he just had to go out on the old one, and by that point it was shot.
Yep, that was bizarre that they didn't have a spare tyre. I remember speaking about the time, because that was the year we saw that horrific crash that nearly wiped out both Yamahas. Yeah, such a strange scenario to find yourself in where you just don't have a tyre. Do not have a tyre. It was bizarre. Yeah, predominantly we do think of this as a Ducati track because it is a fast, fast track. But like you say, we've seen KTM win. Yes, they were under such extreme conditions with Brad Binder, just showing how big his balls are and sticking it out in the rain. And then second one, a proper racer, poacher's victory, if you will, just sitting and waiting. But a win's a win. So, yeah, will we see a different winner, different manufacturer take a win this year? Who knows? We haven't got long to find out. It's only Sunday and that's not that far away.
Exactly. And we may do. There's a chance we could see an Aprilia win around here, but I would imagine the good money's on Ducatis right now. But we will get to our predictions soon enough, Steve.
Yes, buddy. We will get there.
So this circuit then, Steve, it's 2.68 miles. That's 4.3K for all of those in the, non-England and United States world.
Yes.
There are 11 corners, 3 left-handers, 8 of them are right-handers, and there's that new chicane now between turn 2 and 3 that was never there before. This new chicane is there to slow people down on the approach to turn 3 because it was there that we saw the horrendous near death of Valentino Rossi and Maverick Vinales as the bikes of Johann Zarco and Franco Morbidelli just tumbled across the corner there.
Yeah. That was definitely a one-off crash, but something needed to be done. So they have put the chicane in, which is good, like you say, to slow people down, eliminate that risk. So, yeah, I think everyone's on board with what they've done. So if you're against it, then, well, you're just a bit of a nutter. But everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be interesting to see what that chicane does to the racing as well.
It will.
Because that's quite a fast bit of the track, obviously. They put it there to slow down. I'm sure, really, the Ducatis are going to not really have much more problems here. The Ducatis have benefited very well around this track because it's been a very stop-start track. It's a short, sharp, straight, hard braking zone, turn the corner, short, sharp, straight, hard braking zone, turn a corner. Something the Ducatis are very, very good at, which is why they've always been very good around here.
Yep.
And I think probably putting a chicane in is only going to benefit them more because you're just adding another hard stop and another short, sharp, straight in after it.
Yeah, it really, they've just sort of, it's almost like they've built it with a Ducati in mind. But who knows? We'll see. Well, it's Friday, I'll come around soon enough. It's only a few days away and we'll soon find out.
Exactly. So this track is 13 meters wide, 42 feet for anyone that using old money there. So it's somewhere in the middle, in it. It's just a normal width track. Yeah. And the longest straight is merely 626 meters. So it's quite a short straight, but as we've just said, is a lot of hard braking zones, short, sharp straights, tight corners. So it's just a, that's just a symptom of that, really. You can't have a lot of long straights and have a lot of short, sharp straights. That's not really how track design works. I don't know what I'm saying there. I'm just going to shut up and keep going. The track first appeared on the calendar in 1996 when it was called the Österreich Ring. Then it turned into the A1 Ring for 1997, named after the sponsor and mobile phone network in Austria, A1. In 2000, after 97, it just dropped off the calendar completely. In 2011, the track became the Red Bull Ring once it was bought by one Dietrich Mateschitz, the Red Bull billionaire, and has hosted MotoGP races since 2016. It had a big refurbishing job to get it up to scratch to host the all of the international race series that go there now. And a lot of people say, don't they, that it's a properly good event because they don't do it to make money. Dietrich Mateschitz, I'm sure part of this is just a tax write-off for him every year. If he loses money putting on great events every year, it's probably not a problem for the guy that's making hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Like, that's just final euros, I guess.
Yeah, people do say that a lot as well. Every time you speak to someone who goes there for the first time, they say, they all come away so impressed with just what an event it is. Some describe it as like a motorsport festival, if you will. You know, there's so much going on. It's not just about MotoGP, it's about motorsport as a whole. So like you say, it is just owned by a millionaire with a love of motorsport. So what more could you want? Someone with an excessive amount of money that's willing to spend it on something that we love, you're going to get treated to a proper weekend. So it's definitely on the bucket list to go to. I think we might have to nip down there at some point, buddy, and just say hi.
Just nip across. But yes, Dietrich Mateschitz really is a motorsport fan's wet dream. The guy owns two Formula One teams. He essentially bankrolls most of the KTM projects. Like, he's putting in huge amounts of money into motorsport and is for all intents and purposes, just seems to be quite a fun fella, really. He's just putting money into the things that we love. So, you know what, every time you buy a Red Bull, I'm sure, as with all billionaires, he's probably sitting in his evil lair somewhere, but he seems to be doing the nice thing. Like, he's giving us entertainment, and you know what, maybe that's probably better than Bezos. So, yeah, in the grand scheme of billionaires, I like Dietrich.
Yes, yeah. I'm not on board with like excessive wealth, but when you see people like this throwing it back into something that they've obviously got a passion for, and you know, which essentially provides us, the general public, with entertainment, I'm game for that. You know, he's not just sitting on it, counting it, and just rubbing it in our faces, if you will. This guy is truly putting it back out there into something that he loves as well. So, yeah, I'm game for it. Go out and buy a Red Bull.
Exactly. Go out and buy a Red Bull. So we said then, Steve, the Österreich Ring appeared on the calendar in 1996, but this wasn't the first time Grand Prix racing hit Austria. It first appeared... Grand Prix racing, this is, first appeared in Austria in 1971 at the Salzburg Ring, where it remained until the early 90s, where it was scrapped due to safety issues, and that's when the Österreich Ring and then the A1 Ring took over.
Yep, absolutely that.
So, yeah, this part of Austria has had, well, Austria full stop, has had racing, Grand Prix motorcycle racing for a very long time. And oh my God, Steve, every time I see the pictures of Austria, I'm like, well, fuck, there's a country I need to be getting to. Everything you could want. Good, glorious cities, wonderfully huge mountains, like just a great combination of stuff going on there.
Yeah, every time you see a shot of this circuit as well, like the backdrop, it looks amazing. There's always that shot of the massive Red Bull, if you will, with like the mountains in the background, the bit of the track you can see, and it's just like To me, if you were a photographer, this would be a track where I'd just like, it must, you has to be a wet dream. There's so much going on. Just shoot, and you know, the track itself is such a good track for getting decent shots. So yeah, it is an amazing looking place. I mean, what an advert for motorsport.
Definitely. I think a 65 meters of elevation change along the track as well. So like, it's, there's big ups and downs as well. It's a good one.
Yeah, Austria is not really a flat country, so it's, it almost sort of says 64 meters. It does seem like it's built on a mountainside. But, you know, cast of I want to say there's some bloody sound.
The hills
of music,
are alive with the sound of music, with the songs they have sung for 1,000 years. That's all the lyrics I know, mate, so I've saved everyone there. But yes, it is Sound of Music.
Is it Sound of Music? Yeah. All right, Von Trapp.
I can't help myself. Yeah, I know how much people like it when I sing, so I've really started to bring that more and more into the shows. I'm really hoping that this this podcast can be the springboard I need to start my musical career, Steve.
I can see it. I can see where you're going with it, buddy. You know, you
might thank have to you.
Have a word with Andy the Music Man and just, you know, need a voice.
I'll be like, bro, hit me up. I can help you. I'll do backing vocals.
Yeah. We had a chap at work have a little mishap the other day with a wasp at work. Got stung, 'cause there's a lot of wasps over here at the minute, down here. They're everywhere. You know, their population has rocketed this year with all this heat. Anyway, I'm up on top of the boat, and all of a sudden, this thing kicks off, which sounds like Mariah Carey hitting the high notes. I love this lad running out of the building. And yeah, he'd been stung pretty well. And I've never heard a gentleman's voice hit such a high note before in all my life.
It Where was he stung?
On the hand.
Oh, what?
I know, snowflake.
That's a bit less exciting than I hoped. I thought you were really going to say it was up around the genitals, and I was like, all right, fair enough. But I don't really have, unless you're allergic to wasps, I mean, I don't have that much sympathy. A wasp sting, it's mildly painful, but it's not the end of the world. It's one of those, fucking prick kind of pains, but you kind of get over it, all right? It's not like a bee sting fucking hurts. A wasp sting, yeah. Again, unless you're allergic, like, they're fine. Like, one is fine. You don't want to be stung over and over again, but, like, one is all right.
Yeah, I got stung about a week ago, just on the inside of the elbow. I was like, oh, you little bastard. I swear he was laughing as he flew away. son of a bitch. But, yeah, you just carry on. But, yeah, poor old dude. He got stung well. And, my God, did he shriek. I think it took him by surprise. I think he knew it was there. And it was, like, that sudden sharp pain. He was like, ah! Woof, oh. Gone like limbs. He was out. But yeah, there we go. That's my story. Of singing and hitting high notes.
Bless him. Right, Steve, then back to to Austria and away from my singing and away from insects. The most wins around this circuit, Steve, in its current iteration go to, well, not in its current iteration, because let's remember the iteration has now changed. It's a different circuit this year, which we will get to. But since MotoGP has returned to the Red Bull Ring, the most wins go to Dovi, who took three. And then we have a raft of riders with one win apiece. That's Binder, Martin, yes. Oliveira, Lorenzo, and Iannone. All of them have one win apiece. It's really nice seeing Iannone's name again. Did you see Iannone, actually, speaking of him while we're here, announced that the end of 2024 is when his doping ban is over and he will be back to racing in some form?
Yeah, I saw that. Well, heard, I read it. And I was like, he's determined, you know. He's obviously looking forward to it. You know, it's not something that he sort of thought, right, well, that's over. You know, he's said he's coming back somewhere. Where that'll be, we'll have to wait and see, because we, you know, obviously he's had a long time out of the saddle, so it's going to take him a while to get up to speed. It's not like something, you know, you can just hop on and be instantly quick. Well, we know he's talented, so he's going to be faster than the average person. But even so, when you're in this top 1%, you still have to work at it. So I don't know. I think He could land himself a World Superbike seat or domestic series seat, but we'll have to wait and see. I think it'd be fantastic to see him back in MotoGP, but I'm dubious about whether that would ever happen just because of the history. But
And the age, man. Like, he's not going to come back to MotoGP. I can see him going back to Italian Superbikes or something for an Aprilia team, doing a season there. If he does well, I could see him getting a grabbing a World Superbike ride out of it. But there's no way he's back into MotoGP or back into the Grand Prix paddock.
I don't think so, not unless something aligns amazingly for him. But no, I think you're right. I think probably an Italian superbike ride, and if that goes well, he'll jump across to World Superbikes, and we'll see. But it will be good to see him back. I really like Ian Nonet. Okay, he had a blot in his copybook, but he's such a character. And we'd spoken about how you want that playboy, you want that kind of image, you want someone to grab your attention in motorsport and or in any sport. And this guy just had it in swathes. All the persona, the charisma, the almost arrogance that kind of oozed out of him. And he's a bloody handsome chap, good rider, character, and it's exactly what you want. So whoever manages to sign him and land him is going to get a really good rider and a handsome bastard at that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he had that much charisma. But he was certainly one of the most handsome men that I've ever seen in my life, and was just had the arrogance, had the, and I think he's probably a prick. Let's face it, he's probably a prick. But I couldn't help but quite like him, even
Yeah,
through everything else.
okay.
I quite like him because he is that just because he's a bit of a dickhead. He's got that about him. Like everyone on the grid now is pretty nice. Generally, they seem to all be pretty pally-pally. I kind of want a dickhead in there, so to give me someone to be like, "Oh, I hate you," and that's what he was very good for. And I'd like to see him back because I did like him, but I think he's probably a prick.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think every series of race series needs its rogue, it needs its rebel, someone who pushes the boundaries and just is appealing, someone with the social media presence, like Ian Nonet's social media presence when he was in MotoGP was off the hook. Everything was so calculated. I mean, it was like, who lives in a house like this? He's sorting his wardrobe out in just his pants, in his chiseled washboard stomach. It's like, yeah, I do that all the time. I do that every day. I go upstairs and people laugh.
The problem
Anyone
is, Steve,
sees
is
it.
when we wear bright white underwear like that, there's always a risk of a drip mark. He very carefully curated it so there were no drips. Whether he had an amazing shake at the end of his business or whether he just put clean pants on for the photo shoot, we'll never know.
Mate, I don't wear white underwear for that reason. You just can't see it. You can't trust yourself. You don't know. You're just like, am I sweating or am I just, have I leaked? Tenner for
Right,
Men
and
adverts,
I think
sponsors.
that's true for all men, Steve. I think probably the reason what men there's not many pairs of white underwear out there for men is exactly that, is because we cannot be trusted. We cannot be
No,
trusted.
absolutely. No, I like the outrageously bright underwear that, if you're lucky enough to see it, it's going to blow your mind. I'm not wearing white because you don't try, you hit 40, you don't trust yourself, be it to shake it enough or if you fart, there could be danger.
That's why I quite like camo underwear because it really blends in nicely.
Yeah, I wear camo shorts all the time for work just for that reason. I'm just like, they can disguise anything. Dear.
Oh dear. Anyway, Steve, this is the point where normally we would talk about the outright lap record, the race lap record, pole lap
Yeah,
record, top
sure.
speed records around the circuit, but brand new circuit this year, man, we have nothing. That new chicane has changed the layout completely, so all of the stats we had are now irrelevant. So, let's just wait and see.
Yeah, properly stoked for that. I love a new track. I love a new thing, a new essentially, it's not a new track, but it's new. It's starting afresh. That's always good. We don't know how it's going to go. We do kind of know how it's going to go, apart from one little kink. But there we are.
Exactly, my friend. Which is a good point, actually, Steve. I tell you what, let's make a little game out of not knowing what's going to go on here. We're going to have our predictions later in the show, obviously. But very quickly, I don't want to get to predict times or anything here, but let's just predict riders. Who's going to get the outright lap record, the race lap record, the pole lap record, and the top speed in this track? You go first on this one. I've really put you on the... I didn't even warn you this was going to come, so this is just off the hip.
Martin.
Just across the board.
Yeah. Jorge Martin, I think, well, because that guy's won that pace is incredible. You know, he's been the qualifying king so far-ish of front rows, pole position. So, yeah, I've got a feeling he's going to be quick.
That's probably fair. So you are calling Martin for literally all of the records?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Well, I have to say, I'm with you certainly on the pole lap record, I think, is going to be Martin. Which means it's going to be the race lap. Oh, it's going to be the outright lap record, isn't it? Yeah. I reckon the top speed is going to be Johann Zarco, and I reckon the race lap record is going to go to someone weird. I reckon the race lap record is going to go to... he's wounded. No, right. I'm going to go with Aleix Espargaró for the race lap record.
Yeah, I think you're probably right on that one.
That's what I'm going with. I'm going Martin, Aleix, Martin, Zarco for outright race lap, pole lap, and top speed.
Why not?
There we go. There's some more predictions to recap next week, Steve, but we will get to those. Which actually means it's time to talk about last year's podium, or podiums. Because there was two races last year.
There was. Yeah, I always forget that. I always think there was one, but no, there was actually two.
Yeah, it's funny because I kind of think of 2020 as the COVID year, but then you look at what happened in 2021, you're like, oh, fuck no, with all the race calendars, there was still the hangover from COVID. We had two races in places, like weird stuff happened to try and get around restrictions, etc. So we were still battling with the COVID a lot last year too.
Yeah, we were certainly still feeling the fallout, buddy. Nothing was quite normal just yet or at that time. So...
Exactly. So the first race then, Steve, which I think was the Styrian Grand Prix, the first one. That was won by Jorge Martin. Johan Mir finished second and Fabio Quartararo was third. In race two, which would have been the Grand Prix van Oostenrijk, was won by Brad Binder. This was that soaking wet race where it was just a mad finish in the rain. Brad Binder won that one. Pekka Bagnaia finished second and Jorge Martin was third.
Yes. Yeah, buddy. I'm sure it was that way around.
That, Steve, brings us very nicely onto the weather for the weekend because, oh my God, it could be wild. Depending on where you look here, I have taken now to looking across multiple weather platforms because it turns out everyone predicts different weather. So I assume someone can claim they were correct. But it's pretty much looking like it's going to be warm, cloudy, with potential storms and rain all weekend.
Yes. So I was just having a look on mine and it won't work because I've just realized I think the thunder has knocked out all signal, which is rather annoying.
Well, I mean, at least it's not knocked out the internet, though. We can still talk. So that's OK.
Yeah, I think it's knocked out phone signal. That's annoying. Oh, well. But yeah, you are right. If you look across multiple platforms, they normally give you a completely contrasting forecast, which is bloody annoying. So if it's a day out, I tend to pick, you know, the brightest one. If it's something I don't really want to, you know, it's going to rain, we better stay at home.
Yeah, that's fair. I like that. That's good thinking, Steve. I like that one a lot. But yeah, so warm, cloudy, storms and rain, potentially all weekend, which means it could end up being another quite exciting race.
Yes, mate, it really could.
So then, Steve, finally, that brings us to our predictions here. I made you go first in the off-the-cuff fire-away prediction, so I'll go first on this one. I'm predicting an Enea Bastianini win, Aleix Espargaró second, and I think Fabio Quartararo is going to pull something out of the bag and get a third place here. I think that Pecco Bagnaia is going to shit the bed from the lead and he's going to be leading comfortably, and Enea Bastianini is going to put him under pressure and he's going to crash out. So that's my prediction for the weekend. Just those top three, not the crash, but the top three is my prediction for the weekend.
All right, mine's similar. But a fraction different. So I've gone for Enea for the win as well.
Okay.
Shortly followed by Aleix.
Okay, we're on a roll here.
We are. But then I've also gone for Mav in third.
Nice. Okay. That feels more likely than Fabio Quartararo, actually, now I think about it. But I've locked mine in, Steve, so we'll see what happens here.
Yeah, I just think Mav is starting to look like a racer that I can get behind. So, yeah, with Yamaha's history around here, I think Fabio's going to be fourth or fifth.
To be fair, I do think as well, considering Yamaha's performance around here generally, fourth or fifth is going to be a pretty fucking good result, all things considered, for Quartararo.
Yeah, my top five that I was sort of running through at work while I was thinking about it today was like Enea, Aleix, Merv, and then I couldn't pick between Pecco and Fabio for fourth and fifth. I kept finding sort of running through scenarios where I was like, I don't know. But then this is MotoGP, and we could both be absolutely and completely wrong. If it rains, Christ no. Don't count out Binder, don't count out Miller. Loads of people, you know, depending on this, that is based on a dry race. So,
yeah, definitely. And we just said earlier on in the show, Steve, well, I said, didn't I? I didn't think Fabio Di Giannantonio or Luca Marini had proved they were capable of taking a win in MotoGP yet. But you know what? In a fucking weird wet race around Austria, maybe they can.
Yeah, that's what I sort of said. You know, look at Binder's win. These guys are pretty damn good in the wet. So who knows, mate? Absolutely. Who knows? It's MotoGP. So Christ knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. That's very almost the end of the show, Steve. Before we get there, let's just very quickly take a look at the Fantasy League, shall we? Because we didn't do it last week and we haven't done it in numerous weeks now. So
we talk too much, we've run out of time. So
exactly. Where are you at the moment, Steve, in the Fantasy League?
80 or something like that. I did have it up, and annoyingly, I've left the phone down for too long and it shut it down.
It's okay. I found you. You are in 83rd overall. Oh, I'm losing you. You're coming back. You're back. I can see you again. It's okay.
It's probably a little bit of thunder and lightning, mate. Every time I can hear it rumbling out there, I believe that, or the neighbors have got a stomach problem.
Either or. But yes, you're in 83rd there, Steve, on 962.5 points. I am in 44th with 1037 points. And I've still got a boost left, which is good. So, you know, I can still climb some spots. I'm not getting anywhere near the top 10, though, I don't think, by the end of the year, because the top 10, Steve, look like this. In joint ninth place here, two players here, Crumpers from Great Britain and Poleman from the USA, on exactly the same number of points in ninth. Eighth place from Germany is Aprilia Racing, and then seventh from Spain is Gaffaron. Team Rhino in sixth from the USA, and from Germany in fifth place are Yamaha Lions. Tiger Motorsport is in fourth from Great Britain, and then we hit the top three, Steve. And the top three look like this. Ride the Lightning is in third from Poland with 1,187.5 points. In second is No Pressure ZA from South Africa with 1,193.5 points. And then still with a commanding lead from Portugal in first place is Vikings team with 1,274 points. That's an average of 106.2 points per race. I think I've only scored more than 106.2 points like once or twice this season.
Yeah, and looking through it as well, First has got a boost left, but importantly, second has got two left. So that could get interesting because although there is a gap between first and second, when you look back down the order, fifth and fourth are separated by half a point. Not much.
Indeed.
Yes. And then fourth to third, 6.5 points. Nothing. Third to second, 6 points. Not a great deal. Those boosts, mate, are going to be crucial.
They are going to be crucial. The gap between second and first, though, that we're looking at a gap of 80 points there, 80.5 points. Like, that's a big gap to be climbing. But you are right. The rest of the top 10 is
Wait.
pretty close. In fact, from 10th to second are only covered by 35 points or something. So it's pretty tight. And actually, you can climb it down to the top 20 are covered by a reasonable margin here. 20th place on 1,121 points, up to second on 1,193 points. Like, it's only 70 points covering the 20th to second, and then another 70 points covering second to first.
It's close, mate. There's a lot to play for, yeah? And there's a lot of people with boost left scattered around. 14.2. A lot of people still got one. There's a lot of boost left in there. People, there's some close numbers here. So, yeah, I unfortunately have used all mine, dickhead. But there we go. I'd like to keep up my usual form of not having all four riders finish in every race, just to add a bit of, delicate spice.
Who did you have for the last race?
I had Fabio and then Aleix, who I used my last boost on, and
Yeah, I
then
used a boost on him too for the weekend. That was annoying, wasn't it?
I've got Maverick and Fabio Digi and Antonio. So they're all in there. All in there. What
Okay,
my
I.
killer is, I started wrong with my I put Yamaha in as my team, not Ducati. Bad move.
Mistakes were made. Think about the
Mistakes
18
don't work.
podiums you've given up on this year, Steve.
Exactly. That was a bad move. And I have no money to replace. If I drop Fabio, I really have nothing. If I drop Fabio, I can have Pol, Darren Binder, Stefan Bradl, Fabio, Remy, Pirro, or Lorenzo Savadori.
You may as well keep Fabio in for Austria, mate. It's a Ducati. Like, you're probably
Exactly.
fine.
Yeah. I think we will stick. So, yeah, not many options, but we'll work at it. We'll see what changes we can make and we'll hope for the best because that's all we can really do.
Exactly, my friend. Exactly that. So that's pretty much the end of the show, I think, Steve.
I think it pretty much is, mate. I think it pretty much is. Right. I was just
Okay.
trying to reverse my accidental move of a team member before I forget.
So reference material for this week's episode came from MotoGP.com, the-race.com, crash.net, and visordown.com. Guys, thank you all very much for listening. If you've got anything you want to say to us, any questions at all, if you want to get in touch. We said something off the top about getting in touch. I can't remember what it was now. But if you want to get in touch about whatever it was that we said earlier on in the show to get in touch about, you can find us on.
We are for the love of MotoGP. And what Tim was talking about was that the crazy, silly season thoughts Tim said about Mr. Marquez jumping across the Ducati. So let us know what you think. What are your crazy, silly season predictions? But yes, we are for the love of MotoGP. And you can find us on Instagram and Twitter or come join the Facebook group. It's good over there. It's still growing. We've picked up a few members this week. So thank you all for joining and getting involved. But yeah, if you've got anything for correction, corner, anything you want to say, drop us an email if you like. We are for the love of MotoGP at gmail.com.
There we go. As per usual, Steve is here to save the day when I've forgotten what the fuck it is I'm talking about. So, guys,
I'm just that
thank
guy
you all
sits in the
very.
background,
I know,
just
Steve, if I
remembering
had enough
random shit.
money, if I had enough money, I would pay you to be my mentat, to just remember shit for me and do computing for me and just exist in the Dune universe with me. I think that would be great.
I'd just like hovering in the background. Just that person. Who's that fucker? I don't know. Quick Google. Maybe. Save the day.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. I'd enjoy that a lot, Steve. But sadly, I don't earn enough to pay you to do that. So maybe that can be a plan for my future. But until then, thank you all very much for listening, guys. We will speak to you next week with our... Hang on. With our Crypto Data Motorrad Grand Prix von Oosterreich race review. So stay long safe. Name. Look after each other. And we'll speak to you next week, guys. Goodbye.
Take care, guys.
Music is by Andrew Greenwood. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.